Yes. So Andrew Gibbons is here. That's me. Rob Knowles is over there. At least he is on the in this screen. Last week we had a brief hour-ish networking event with a group of seven or eight people who were all interested that we are in interruptions. We tended to focus on the interactive interruptions. So I've already said more than I want to. We're going to do a quick recording of the review and learning from that. Rob, tell us briefly who you are and kick us off.
Okay, thank you, Andrew. So it's Rob Knowles, my company's Qubit, and you can see the strap line thinking towards tomorrow. I found it really interesting the cultural differences. We had some visitors from across the Atlantic, and various ages and scopes of business. But for me, the one that kind of stuck out the most, although there were a few, Andrew, was when the lady was talking about immediacy, about the Gen Z people, and how so these are kind of my words and thoughts afterwards, how people have been now digitally groomed, if you like, so digital natives.
In a form of speaking.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate term that we use, but now my own grandchildren now, they know their way around an iPad. It's brilliant. We'll go out to a restaurant and we can soothe them by popping the iPad on the table, and they're happy to just graze away at their chips. But if
So
we
you think that, I mean, the point was raised that in a group of people, I'm always hesitant to talk about baby boomers this and generation that, but there's a body of people who were, it was mentioned, wasn't it, who were recruited during COVID, who were recruited during an online interactive time without actually meeting people physically. Those people, it was claimed, seemed to have a particular propensity to interrupt.
I can, yes, I remember that part of the conversation. And whilst it was going on, perhaps it's bad listening on my part, I don't know. But I was recalling very, very instances. And some of them were then being mentioned how the technology might let you down, the time gap. There was the challenges also around when you're actually in front of a person, you're much more likely to read the body language, the signals, etc. Whereas when you can only see what we can see now, the kind of mid-arm upwards. And then that led me to thinking on reflection about, well, how do deaf people communicate? It's actually in that space, with hand signals and facial expressions coming into the mixed style.
True.
But you're absolutely right that there is that tendency to jump in. And I can't remember which, I think it was one of the American ladies was talking about the reasons why people jump in. Not justifying it
One of
by any
them was they come from New
means.
York.
I did once see an interview with Mel Brooks on the TV, and he was coaching politicians how to speak on the TV and how they interrupted quickly, or they cough to get the camera on them. So there may be a transatlantic dimension to this, absolutely, because us Brits, we're very polite and reserved, aren't we? We sit back. But the lockdown generation, as it were, or the experiences during lockdown. And I'm sure, as with many people, it was a challenge to actually deliver training. So how do you keep it interactive? Ask lots of questions, wait for the answer. And yet there are these pauses.
So the point they were making, wasn't it, is that means of working, which was online, when at the very least brought into hybrid working on site, appears to have brought with it a propensity to interrupt. I haven't seen enough of that to really form a view.
Just processing that. No, I mean, when I visited sites, I mean, for example, last week I was holding a committee meeting. People in the room, there were interruptions, but I think that was, I don't know. N never gave that any thought, but
I
absolutely.
haven't seen it. I'm neutralizing and saying I haven't seen enough of it to form it. I'll tell you something else that came up last week. I'm just thinking of it now, and that was that, and you mentioned this yourself. There are positive interruptions. I think there is a case that can be made to interrupt. And I think that may be a bit of a legitimizing thing from our point of view, but I actually do genuinely believe there is, so long as you don't fall back that on that all
Yeah, if it becomes your style, then
the time.
it's not good. the example I gave you was it was a conscious decision to do so, and it was to move the debate on. I suppose the best way I could describe it so people understand it is playing the kind of David Dimbleby aspect at question times.
Mm.
So when people are rambling, it's not shut them down rudely, but hey, we got a program to make here,
yeah.
here for a reason. And I didn't actually feel bad at all about it. A few people spoke to me about it afterwards, including the MD, who was one of the people who I had to remind that he wasn't the person asked the question. But yeah, absolutely, that was the job I was paid to do.
Yeah.
And I think as long as you do it in an assertive way, it's okay. People will accept it. You will, of course, get people who sulk. Absolutely. but the idea is to make them go, okay, he's told me I'm not asking a question. What is my question? So it's to kind of make them think, it's to help them.
I think there was also a kind of implicit view throughout, and frankly, we saw a bit of it during the call, where people just talk for too long. And if people we think as the recipient of speech talk for too long, they're almost inviting interruption.
I can live with that. I'm just trying to think of.
I'm not getting at you here personally. I had someone else.
No. I live with that in a sense. I was trying to think of a man I admired who was a chief exec of an organization. When he was asked a question, there'd always be a couple of seconds before he answered.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gave a very full answer. So there'll be a little bit of background to it. And he didn't go into the what you don't realize, all the pressures I'm under. He would give a very good and clear and understandable background to it. Then he'd get to the point and then he'd just remind the question. So it was a beautifully rounded answer, and it probably could have lasted 5 minutes. But personally, I used to really listen hard to that. Now, I could see some people who probably wouldn't, or I've known of some people, but would they have listened to anybody who just gave a 2 minute answer? I don't know. But he, for me anyway, he just got that off to an art.
Yeah, and it is interesting because there's two dimensions at least to this, isn't it? There's the recipient and the transmitter, if you like. And I think a lot of transmitters, and I'm speaking as one, I'm being self-critical here. I think sometimes we over-exaggerate the interest people have in what we've got to say. And we talk for too long about things that people aren't interested in. And maybe if we were more deliberate about being concise and talking about what people were interested in, we wouldn't get interrupted so much.
I love the logic of that. What I find is that there's the part of me that's thinking about now the audience on the screen, and part of me thinking about the audience, the live audience. So with the live audience, you can kind of judge a little bit. Am I losing it? Is the energy going out of the room? Yeah. Is it time for a break? But I also believe that the conciseness, you can be too concise. So you can just read a few bullet points and. Part of the role of the person in the front, I believe, is to join the dots or at least allow other people to join the dots by asking good questions.
Yep.
So, you know, forgive the mixed metaphors, but bring some colour to what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So I can remember coaching somebody once and they said, the trouble with I'm not getting anywhere with this person. They just answer yes and no. I said, well, what kind of questions are you asking? And that was the root cause, the lack of thought. Is it just... So let them talk, and then you've got to go on listen. Your listening skills really come in.
Well, yeah, I agree with that too, because contextually, that's everything, isn't it? In certain contexts, you need to interrupt because people are rambling off the point, you're time constrained, you've got to get somewhere as an outcome. And you need to interrupt, say, hold on, we've been there, we've done that, or we've heard enough, move on. So we're not talking about the extreme sense of never, ever interrupt. Although I kept quoting Nancy Klein's book, The Promise That Changes Everything, I Will Not Interrupt You. So she has written about just that. And I quoted people like Linda Aspey, who I've seen in interview, never interrupt. It's a skill. It's a skill. It's a capability. Is it personality driven? I don't know. It's a skill I don't possess. I would love to be able to hear people out right to the end. Let the tape run out and then wait, because we also talked about discomfort with silence, didn't we? Having not interrupted, having respectfully shown a bit of reflection time, and then make a concise answer if one was required. I can't do those things.
Oh, I'd always challenge you that you could. You just haven't got there yet. But, yeah, no, absolutely. Well, you strike me as a person who does a lot of self-reflection. So
I do.
There'll be a reason or reasons behind that, whether it's an impatience or a personality thing. But
an eagerness to do something useful. The reason I interrupt people so much is I'm thinking, okay, I really have got to say this. I think it's helpful. It's not just rudeness, impoliteness. I really think what I'm about to say. But then I know perfectly well, because I read that Nancy Klein, always my go-to person, this will say something like, is what I'm about to say more important than what you were about to think?
So in your eagerness to what was it? You're eager to help me, was it? Sorry. So how do you know that the most helpful thing you could be is quiet?
Exactly. And I accept that's the default that should be the case. Mm. Carry on speaking, Rob, because what I was about to say is not as important as what you're thinking. That's what I know I should always think. I can do it. I can do it. I am capable of that with extreme self-discipline. Because a comment I made to myself last week was sacrifice. Sometimes we've got to sacrifice what we were going to say, because allowing the person to speak uninterruptedly is more important.
Yeah, I've seen that in, I'm going to use the word extreme, but perhaps that's the wrong, it's too far down that kind of behavioural channel. But working with colleagues who get very frustrated, we used to have a rant line, you know, so my mate's on the road, he's just got back in the car. Okay, I'll just put you on loudspeaker, Tim, and let you go and let you rant for half an hour.
Yeah.
Before I know it, he's back home and he's eased all his nonsense out of his head. Well, I'm mindful that we're being taped. And I remember doing this with a colleague I did some voluntary work with, and she said after a rant, thank you for not trying to fix me.
Yeah.
I just needed to.
And yet we're not therapists. So there are people who are, and they possess that skill and it suits them. They're trained in it. I mean, my father used to work with somebody who used to famously put the phone in a drawer and close it and carry on working. And every minute or so, just open the, yeah, okay, I get it. And put the phone back in, and was seen to do that.
I think part of the challenge is also is the person in front of me just having a general rant, or do I really need to listen? So this is a kind of self-survival thing as well as an efficiency thing, because if you go off on one for 20 minutes and I'm really intensely listening, but at the end of it all you've wanted to do is shout, you just absorb 20 minutes of my intellect, for want of a better expression, and you don't want me to say anything. Okay, that's fine. But
okay, and nearly interrupting you, coming to the end, amazingly, of the sort of time we said we'd give this, anything particularly strong as a carryaway from last week's get-together, which was good? It was the right number of people involved in the way that suited them. I think we got a lot out of that. Did anything particularly hit you that you think you're going to go away and do as a result?
Certainly look at that generational aspect. I'm not 100% sold on it, but I've experienced evidence, seen it with my own eyes. But what I want to do is just unpick that a little bit more.
Right.
Somebody mentioned etiquette with digital, corporate, and interpersonal etiquette, and I'd never drilled down that far with that. So that's worthy for me anyway of another look.
And part of that was about the camera on, part of that was muting, part of it was using the hand up thing, all those sorts of issues.
Yeah, but I do find also, again, thinking with hindsight, so the corporate etiquette, so a place I'm going to tomorrow, the culture there is, it's quite lighthearted, but I would describe it as an ou matron. You know, you make a double entendre and you're in there. How far it goes, I don't know, and it's none of my business.
Yeah, sure.
As long as it doesn't get in the way of what they're doing. So,
and yeah, that's interesting. And again, I don't want to extend this because we are hitting time. This is contextual. How we behave and what's acceptable and what's beneficial and useful in one context is totally different to another. So we've got to be pretty agile. I'm going to close it down because otherwise we're going to reopen this and be going on longer than we thought. And it's an issue we can return to. We've already talked about doing something on distractions, which is a different form of interruption than this interpersonally transactional one. So thank you once again. Appreciate that.
No, thank you. It's always great to have a chat with you, Andrew, and making me think. I love it.